I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. I'm speaking from a telephone as I'm on the road headed back to New York City. And hopefully you'll be able to hear me all right. We're going to talk about healing today at the beginning of our program using different approaches, all of it coming from independent peer-review science, which means that orthodox science is actually the biggest supporter of natural and non-toxic approaches to lifestyle. And that's why every day, year in and year out, I share thousands upon thousands of these studies. Now, the mainstream media rarely gives insight on any of these. So you have that advantage of being able to make good choices. We'll talk about that. Then one of the biggest problems facing us today is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And what I've been able to locate is the amount of money each of the sponsors, Democrat and Republican, received in order to say yes to the fast track in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, for those who have studied the issue and presented it to the public, you know that this is the most dangerous treaty in American history, and it would usurp our being able to control the quality and safety of products. We would have no control whatsoever over the $505 trillion interest rate derivatives bubble that many people believe is imminently in jeopardy of popping, and which you and I would have to sacrifice our money in the bank would go to them. And how they got there, I intend to do a commentary today on the Federal Reserve, the most dangerous organization in American history, and why you've been lied to. And I'll show you specific instances and actual historical examples. So we're going to hear from Alan Grayson, one of the very few, a handful of legislators in the House, who sees the dangers of this and is speaking out. Because time is of the essence. You let these legislators know you've accepted money, you've sold your vote, and we will not vote for you, and we want this not to go through. Also today, we are seeing more and more of the Israeli mindset that we so control the United States media and the legislature, both the House and the Senate and the White House, that we can do what we want. We will not be held to the Geneva Conventions or the Nuremberg rules. We can commit genocide, and no one can say a word. And if you do say a word, we will unleash the APEC on you and destroy you. And they are correct. In effect, they've won. Well, almost. Today, we'll share with you the insights of a soldier, one of their soldiers, speaking out, called Breaking the Silence. They say there's no evidence they've committed war crimes. We'll show you the evidence that they commit war crimes and get away with it. Also, if time permits today, I've decided not to have a guest so I could share some in-depth information from a scholar on chemtrails, the consequences of the toxic metal and the chemical aerosols on human health. Now, the fact that chemtrails exist is not in dispute. There are now videos showing inside of the planes. The question is why? Why do we have them? And then what are the consequences when you see the amount of chemicals that are out into the air being released? We need to know this. So I'll talk about that. Also, there's a mysterious affliction in Alaskan polar bears. They're now suffering baldness and lesions. And it's gone up 1,000% after Fukushima. So we'll talk about that. Also, big education firms are spending millions lobbying for pro-testing policies. As a teacher, I am opposed to the idea that the only purpose that we as teachers have and students have is to be commodified. Test for which the textbook publishers, the companies behind it, and everyone who can profit from it. But it does nothing to help the student. So I'll deal with that. and then we'll see what time we have for me to deal with some other issues. So let's begin. We want to begin on a very positive note, something that affirms a person's right to be healthy. There's a very good study out of Australia that a simple herb called fenugreek, F-E-N-U-G-R-E-E-K, fenugreek, can boost women's healthy sexual desire. And we know that women who are approaching menopause or in menopause or postmenopause really start to lose their libido in substantial numbers, very high percentage. Well, this was a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial, and they took a standardized extract of fenugreek, and it has historically been known to help improve sexual cognition, arousal, sexual behavior, sexual drive, orgasm, and that was published in the peer-reviewed journal Phytotherapy Research. And so, quote, the results of this clinical trial have demonstrated that the specialized extract of the T. gracium, that's the seed, that's the fenugreek seed, has a positive effect in enhancing sexual function in healthy menstruating women with self-reported low sexual function. This was done at the University of Sydney, as well as the University of Queensland, University of Southern Queensland, and, quote, in particular, positive changes were observed in both sexual desire and arousal. Furthermore, fenugreek significantly increased levels of E2 and calculated free testosterone compared to placebo. So, that's just something that can help a lot of people, inexpensive, safe, and has double-blind, placebo-controlled study at multiple universities, published in a peer-reviewed journal. Now, there's a new study from Ohio State University, and what it says is that the gut bacteria, the microbiome, that which is in your baby's intestine, can directly impact whether that little toddler acts adventurous or shy or fidgety or cuddly. And here's what they say from Ohio State University. Quote, researchers from Ohio State University studied microbes from the gastrointestinal tracts of children ages 18 months to 27 months and found that the abundance and diversity of certain bacterial species appear to impact behavior, particularly among boys. The correlation exists even after the scientists factored in history of breastfeeding, diet, method of childbirth, all of which are known to influence the type of microbes that populate a child's gut. So healthy bacteria, good bacteria, impact the child. And what goes on in a child's gut is going to impact how they feel and how they act. And here's one of the things a lot of parents do that they shouldn't. They give sugar water in a pacifier bottle to a child. First, it's terrible for the gums and the teeth as they will emerge. But it also creates a toxic bacteria and creates colic. That creates an unhappy toddler. So don't be giving the glucose water or sugar water ever to a toddler. Now, there are many other things that you can give, but that will not upset the bacteria. And of course, if a healthy mother has good bacteria in her body, that is also transmitted through natural immunization through breastfeeding. So, good bacteria, happy toddler. I was asked recently at a conference that people from around the United States came to in Orlando just last Friday about they hear reports of oils being good for us or oils not being good for us, and they don't know what to believe. Well, let me explain. This is from Swinburne University in the United Kingdom. This is the latest study, and it was published in Journal of Functional Foods, which is one of the best journals out there on the relationship of food to what it actually does. And you can add at least 300 additional studies on the subject of oil, in particular, salmon oil. This is the latest. Quote, supplements of salmon oil may reduce markers of oxidative stress. That's actually oxidative stress, it should be, with no effects from additional multivitamins. Results published in the Journal of Functional Food indicate that 6 grams per day of oil for 16 weeks, with or without a daily multiple vitamin, significantly reduced F2 isoprostane levels. And by the way, the F2 isoprostanes are lipids, meaning fats, peroxidation products, and are considered the most reliable biomarkers in vivo. So that's important. So it helps to stop oxidative stress, which leads to inflammation, which leads to pain. So if you have arthritis, or you're diabetic, or you have cancer, or you have Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, you would definitely want to use salmon oil. Or there are other studies showing that walnuts and vegan sources are equally good. Now, every year in the New York City Marathon, and we've had about 30,000 people train and do the marathon with us, and every single one finished, by the way, we don't use their drinks. We have our own stations where we have a sign and volunteers handing out water. But ours is not normal water. Ours is coconut water. Living foods, coconuts, meaning live coconuts. No pasteurization or heat. They're just straight from the coconuts. We probably do hundreds, at least, I would suggest maybe 500 of these. And we also put in some other nutrients from fruits to give us the electrolytes we want. So we're always having energy. We don't hit the wall and end up having to walk. I believe that coconut water is one of nature's most perfect foods. I never will forget the time I was down in the Caribbean and I was doing some research and I was in the jungle and I got a really bad sunburn. So when I came out and I didn't have anything to put on it. So I was asking, do they have a particular clay down there? Because I knew that I could make a poultice out of the clay and paste it on my body. And the chef came out and he said, you're Gary Noy. I said, yeah. He says, well, I've got your cookbooks. I use your cookbooks. And he said, don't eat his food here. I said, why not? He said, trust me, don't eat food here. He said, you're very interested in this. And he said, healthy eating. I said, yes. He said, let me make some healthy dishes. Because at many of these resorts, I can always find something to eat, or I can ask them, or I can go to the market, which I frequently do. I did this in Trinidad, where I went to the farmer's market, bought my own stuff, and then took it back and asked in the hotel, could they, you know, I use their kitchen to make up a dish. And generally, if you give them a nice tip, they say fine. After all, it doesn't cost them anything. So he said, you got a bad burn there. I said, yeah. And he said, Doc, I got just what you need. So about an hour later, he shows up with about 30 green coconuts. And I said, and what's this for? He said, first drink the water and pour the water on your skin. Then take this, open them up. They were open. And he said, take that gelatinous material that would later solidify as coconut meat. But now it's just, I'd never opened up one, a green coconut before, and I had never seen it. It's like visualize a colorless jello bobbing around in your hand. That's what it looks like and feels like. And he said, now, put this all over your body. And I did. Within 10 minutes, the pain was gone. Within an hour, the redness subsided, no burn whatsoever. And now I know that wherever I travel in the world, as long as there's coconuts available, if I should get burned, I have a way of helping myself. So remember that about coconuts. The raw baby coconut, the green coconut, you can take that out and put it on your skin. It's really terrific. But drink the water. This is the latest information from Green Med Info, Sarah G., on coconut water. Quote, unlike conventional drug treatments for Alzheimer's disease, coconut oil and water may help resolve some of the most root basic neurodegenerative conditions. Have you ever noticed that sometimes a food that nourish a particular organ often looks uncannily similar to it? For instance, the walnut shell and biohemispheric flesh look awfully like the skull and brain. It is now known to be exceptionally good for. Pomegranate fruit, the actual fruiting ovary of the plant, looks a lot like the mammalian ovary that has been proven to support, containing relatively high levels of actual bioidentical estrogen. So, too, is the case of the head-like coconut, which is increasingly being looked at for preventing and improving brain dysfunction, such as Alzheimer's, due to its wide range. What does it do? Here's what the scientific literature shows it does. It increases energy production in the brain by providing neurons an alternative to glucose, namely brain-nourishing metabolites of medium-chain fatty acids known as ketone bodies, and by contributing potent antioxidant polyphenols that may reduce oxidative stress, improve brain function, blood circulation, and reduce neuroinflammation. Also by inhibiting amyloid beta plaque associated with neurological toxicity. Indeed, a growing number of cells, animal and human, and population-based studies reveal that coconut consumption may provide a natural solution to a growing global epidemic that pharmaceutical drugs have been shown to do nothing to mitigate. And so, and then about the Alzheimer's water, he says, quote, "We have reported previously on coconut oil and Alzheimer's research, but it appears another coconut product, coconut water, which contains no fatty acids of physiological relevance, may also have great value for those suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Coconut water is one of nature's best forms of hydration due to its isotonic properties." That means its ability to pass through cell membranes easily. "And while the focus on brain health has been primarily on brain structures, meaning neurons and brain plaques, little focus has been on the role of water in the brain health. And particularly, dehydration is a factor in chronic neurodegenerative illnesses. Coconut water may help to restore hydration to the brain. And considering the discovery of the fourth phase of water known as EZ by Gerald Pollack, which acts like a battery by absorbing the energy of sunlight, this increasing hydration of the brain may also translate to increased energy production in those tissues and associated improvements in cognition. First, coconut water contains a range of essential biomolecules needed for health, including vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, amino acids, enzymes, and other growth factors. And second, one of the more promising classes of phytocompounds in coconut water and related plants is cytokinins. Cytokinins, K-I-N-I-N-S. Now, these plant hormones modulate plant cell division and are believed to have anti-aging properties. One cytokinin, known as transzeatin, Z-E-A-T-I-N, has been investigated as a possible new treatment for neurological diseases like Alzheimer's. According to a recent review on coconut's value in Alzheimer's disease, transzeatin is capable of preventing the brain cell damaging properties of amyloid beta brain plaque and related impairments. So, one more thing we can do to be healthier. And finally, I'm training to get ready for the World Games and putting in a lot of miles, and I'm always looking for something to enhance my recovery and my performance. Remember, I'm never competing against another athlete. When you've done as many races as I have all over the world, close to 700, you have so much respect for the other athletes, and they're all, everyone I met has been a really nice person, and there's a lot of camaraderie in races. In fact, when we're doing long races, we all kind of stay together and encourage one another, you know, and one of the best examples of this was down in Washington, D.C., there was the National 20K Championship, and we had the best athletes in our division in America in it, in the Olympians and the national team, and then there were all the rest of us. And I'm getting 150. And it was a beautiful course. We ran the 20K course was where the Washington Memorial is, Lincoln Memorial, that whole runaround. In any case, I'm watching these athletes, and I was just behind the lead athletes. I was one of the two top master athletes. And we were moving. We were trucking. I saw a group of about eight, and one of them was a guy named Franz Mueller, and who was one of the best, one of our best Olympians. And then I saw him, a guy pull back, and I see him spin around, go back, and who had stopped, grab him by the arm, and started talking with him. I didn't know what he was saying. But as I got closer, I could hear him encouraging him, you know, get back in it, get back in it. And then the guy picked up his pace and got back in the race and caught up with the group again. And afterwards, I went over to him and I said, "You represent the best of what it means to be an athlete." And he just smiled. But I've met so many good athletes who have that attitude. So what you're really doing, if you're a real athlete, you're competing against yourself. You're looking in the mirror and saying, how can I get stronger, better, faster? How can I recover faster? And so you're always challenging yourself. So that said, you look and see what you're going to do. Well, if you eat hot dogs, hamburgers, and french fries, I can tell you, you may get away with it early on in your career. You will not get away with it later. Here's what you need if you want to be a long-term athlete. You want to be able to have beets and beet juice in your diet. Beets are one of the richest sources of nitrates. And by the way, don't confuse the beet nitrate with the nitrites added to deli meats. One is a nitrite, N-I-T-R-I-T-E, that's bad. The other's a nitrate, N-I-T-R-A-T-E-S, and they help enhance circulation. So everyone who has a heart problem or vascular problem or has had stroke, you should definitely be considering beet juice. In fact, in a clinical study, volunteers who drank half a liter of beet juice prior to exercising were able to last 15% longer on a treadmill compared to a group in it that did not. Then you want garlic. Garlic is historically, and through all the evidence I've seen in scientific literature, garlic juice prior to an athletic event builds stamina. And there are studies proving this. Then chocolate. Chocolate, organic chocolate, increases the polyphenol level, increases the enhancement of nitric, N-I-T-R-I-C, oxide. That's a gas which increases blood flow to your muscles. And then finally, coconut water, as I just mentioned. It's phenomenal. So those are the things you want, and that's important. That's our health nutrition segment. Now I just want to share this on the environmental issue before we go to our first clip with Alan Grayson on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is from Energy News, quote, from Alaska Dispatch, polar bears in the southern Beaufort Sea area are suffering hair loss due to a condition called alopecia syndrome, but the precise cause of the stress is yet to be determined, according to the study published in Journal of Wildlife Diseases. Over the study, a high percentage of bears examined had the condition, loss of hair around the neck and head and shoulders, accompanied by crusty lesions on the exposed skin. It peaked in 2012 when 28% of the examined polar bears had the problem of the mysterious affliction. Patchy fur loss, bleeding skin lesions, sickened hundreds of Arctic Alaska seals, killing many of them. The affliction was seen among walruses. So then the question is, what could cause this? Well, if you have something that has not happened before at any statistically significant amount, and you have massive, billions upon billions of fish dying off, tens of thousands of sea mammals dying off, 10,000 died on just one little stretch of beach in just a period of weeks, then it cannot be something that is just like the water is getting warmer. It has to be something else. And I believe, and other people believe, that it's the radiation in the ocean that's been pouring out every day, every second of every day since Fukushima. 100,000 gallons a day. And it's reached the west coast of the United States, clear up to the Bering Straits in Alaska. So just remember, those of you who are eating wild salmon or any fish, A, there's alternatives, but B, they're not measuring for radiation in there. Not healthy.
I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now for our environmental segment. This is from Popular Science, Mary Beth Griggs, quote, Antarctica is melting faster than ever before, a massive melting problem. Study after study shows that Antarctica isn't in great shape. Its ice shelves are disappearing, and its ice sheets are collapsing, hastening swiftly rising sea levels. Sounds terrible? But just in case you wanted a second opinion, a new study out of Princeton University takes a look at a decade's worth of satellite data. The results published in Earth and Planetary Science Letters shows that not only is Antarctica melting, it's melting faster than ever before. Unlike other studies that looked at the volume of ice loss, this study used data relating to the mass of the ice, the difference the researchers say between measuring weight loss by looking in a mirror versus using a scale. And so it's massive. Now, why is this important? Why am I sharing this with you? Because of something I said 7 years ago. 7 years ago, I began work on a documentary and a major book. I was really wanting to update my book, Clear, Cleaner, Safer, Greener, Blueprint for New Environment. It's been out of print for a long time. But it helped launch the first Earth Day, and I was out going around the country at that time in celebration of it. In fact, I was a keynote speaker down in Dallas, thousands of people, and it was a celebration of life and a consciousness about the environment. But I wanted to, we've seen so many new studies, and especially tippings. Back then, we didn't have tippings. We just had problems. But people thought, well, those problems don't involve me. Why should I care? You know, I live out here in Oklahoma. I live here in, you know, in Texas. Doesn't impact me. Well, how about the last 5 days of flooding in Texas? The worst flooding in the state's history. And there's at least 4 more weeks of flooding ahead. I was watching the videos this morning, and tractor trailers, everything just getting swept away. Houses swept. People killed. This is today. Also, we have all these volcanoes going off in the last 3 days. And we have earthquakes up and down the whole West Coast. So there's a whole lot of environmental activity occurring now. So I decided, let's look at the worst-case scenario and see what we can do to try to prevent it, or at least not be in harm's way if it happens. And what I saw early on was that virtually all the information coming out about the environment was being filtered and edited so as not to adversely, you know, affect the people. In other words, don't scare the people by telling them the real truth. They can't handle it, and there's nothing we can do about it. So let's just say that we need more studies, and we're not certain, and, you know, we got plenty of time, and the government will do something about it through the EPA or the UN, all of which is nonsense. No one's done anything. And as a result, we are conscious, but we have all these meetings where nothing actually occurs. And nothing occurs for a simple reason, because there's no downside to not doing it. So if someone comes up with an idea, well, shouldn't we try to hold the increase in the temperature to 2 degrees? Yeah, okay, let's make it voluntary. Okay, it's voluntary. So there's no consequence if you don't do anything. And besides, the people who are ultimately going to determine what happens are the major polluters. And they're the major contributors to campaigns, so nothing's going to get done. So then along the way, I filmed a guy out in California who was the fellow that the character in Jurassic Park was based upon, the chaos theorist. And what he told me was this. I asked him a very straight question. I said, do we really know what the timetable will be for some of these major tippings? He said, no, we're in chaos theory. I said, explain that. He said, right now, there's not a human being on Earth who can accurately say whether it'll be next year or 100 years when these ice sheets, gigantic amounts of ice on glaciers begin to break and calve into the ocean. Well, not long after that, over hundreds of scientists were queried about the Larsen B shelf in Antarctica. And they said it'd be 100 to 150 years before it broke off. It broke off 11 days later. And this was the largest break-off of one of these up to that point. Now, there are bigger ones breaking off. So what we see now is that there's so much melting from underneath Greenland and Antarctica and on top, and that water is cold, and it's going in, and it's mixing with cold water, warm water, and salt. That is creating a whole lot of problems for the conveyor belt that takes warm water from the southern regions of the ocean and takes it up north around the northern latitudes and then bring cold water back down. If that conveyor belt ever stops or slows down, it could throw much of Europe and certainly the United Kingdom, Ireland, Scotland, France, Belgium, it could throw all that area into just a devastating, terrible weather cycle. But also, we now see the consequences of these global warmings. So what I'm saying is, for people who say, well, there's 165 million people who live within a few miles of the ocean, but they have time. And I'm saying, says who? Who can guarantee that? So I'm suggesting that we may, in the near future, in the next 5 to 10 years, see massive, massive amounts of ice break off of Greenland and Antarctica. And at that point, it'll be overnight. You know, it'll be within 24 hours, the oceans will rise, which means that the, in and of itself, that may not seem like a lot if they rose 2 inches or 7 inches or a foot. But remember, it's all on an elevation, pulling gravitational pull in, and once it starts, it's not going to stop. And it's the storm surge that comes in with the tide at night. We're already seeing flooding on Alton Road in South Beach, Miami Beach. So it's happening, and it's going to accelerate. And I believe it's going to happen a lot faster than what people appreciate. So that's what it means. Now, to give you just one more perspective on this, this is a different study from Science Daily from the University of Bristol. Quote, sudden onset of ice loss in Antarctica so large it affects the Earth's gravitational field. Quote, a group of scientists led by a team from the University of Bristol, United Kingdom, has observed a sudden increase in ice loss in a previously stable region of Antarctica. The research is published today in Science. Using measurements of the elevation of the Antarctic ice sheet made by a suite of satellites, the researchers found that the southern Antarctic peninsula, showing no signs of change up to 2009, around 2009, multiple glaciers along a vast coastal expanse measuring 750 kilometers in length suddenly started to shed ice into the ocean at a nearly constant rate of 60 cubic kilometers, about 55 trillion liters of water each year. That's 55 trillion. This makes the region the second largest contributor to sea level rise in Antarctica, and the ice loss shows no sign of waning. Dr. Walters and fellow at the University of Bristol who led the study said, quote, to date, the glaciers added roughly 300 cubic kilometers of water to the ocean. That's the equivalent of the volume of nearly 350,000 Empire State Buildings combined. So, for those who think we got all the time in the world and we don't have to do anything right now, my suggestion is we do. We should, in a responsible and reasonable way, realize that no matter what the body politics or corporate interests or individual concerns, we have tippings that are going to tip, and I certainly wouldn't want to be in the way of a tipping or an environmental catastrophe if I could prevent it. Now, I have another issue that I'm concerned with, and that is the issue of testing. I have seen students who were fidgety, who looked out the window,
who didn't seem to be paying attention, but when you speak with them one-on-one, you find out what their interests are. You find out, are you teaching in a way that they can understand or appreciate or are interested in? Or do you have to alter that in some way to help them better connect with what message you're trying to give? If the object of the exercise is for teachers to prepare students for the world in which they live, we're doing a miserable job. But we're doing a great job of getting them to take tests. This is from the Washington Post, Valerie Strauss. It's an article entitled, Big Education Firms Spend Millions Lobbying for Protesting Policies. Quote, the four corporations that dominate the U.S. standardized testing market spend millions of dollars lobbying state and federal officials, as well as sometimes hiring them, to persuade them to favor policies that include mandated student assessments, helping to fuel a nearly $2 billion annual testing business, a new analysis shows. The analysis done by Center for Media and Democracy, a nonprofit liberal watchdog, an advocacy agency based in Wisconsin that tracks corporate influence on public policy, says that four companies, Pearson Education Systems, Houghton Mifflin, Harcourt, and McGraw-Hill, collectively spend $20 million lobbying in states and on Capitol Hill. And then it goes on to talk about how much they spent. Well, here's how it works. Those who spend the most end up profiting tremendously compared to how much they give. And that's what's always interesting, how such small amounts of money, relatively speaking, get them total control over a whole area. 1,000 times that amount comes back to them. So the tests are not needed. The tests prove nothing. It's just they were smart enough to figure out how to game the system by getting all these tests taken and making all the time necessary to prepare for the test instead of learning about life. Now, another area I'm concerned about is that people are buying houses, in my opinion, biggest mistake you can make. We are in a housing bubble, and it's going to get smashed. I believe we are going to have a big smash on several levels. How do we get to where we are so much in debt and still consider ourselves prosperous? That we can't tell the truth about our actual financial condition. The average person is not even making as much in take-home usable dollars, inflation-adjusted, as we did in 1970. How is it people are coming out of college and have no job at all, and many people coming out with graduate degrees who are having to do work of a person that didn't require college education do it? Why aren't we advocating for two-year colleges, junior colleges, special career colleges? Because if you take a course in nursing or radiology or biological sciences, there's jobs out there. But if you take a normal course in liberal arts, there's no jobs. So we are not thinking deeply enough, and yet we're in debt, and no one is forgiving our debt. I believe that the problem began in earnest back in 1907, because there was a panic in 1907, and this was the final crisis before the creation in 1910 of what would be a Jekyll Island conference. It was put together by Senator Nelson Aldrich, and he convened it. It was then later signed off on by. And that's where they created the concept of 12 reserve banks owned by member banks. And they would have total control. No one could tell them what to do, how to do it. They would control everything. And it would not be an agency of the federal government. You could not audit it. Then their policies directly led to the Great Depression. And for a simple reason, the Federal Reserve lowered the interest rates. And that was great. When you have low interest rates, people go out and buy things. Let's buy a house. Let's buy a car. Zero down and zero interest for 10 years. Well, heck, I'm going to sell that car before 10 years. No money down. You don't have to worry about your credit. You could be bankrupt. You could make very little money. We'll guarantee that you get this house. Well, gee whiz. I better get that house. And businesses. Hey, if I can go out and buy a lot of inventory And if I don't have pay interest rates that are high on it, that means that my margin of profit is going to be greater. So low, low interest rates automatically create bubbles. And then no one looks at the consequence of the bubble. Well, speculators are the worst, and were the worst, among the creator of the bubbles back in the Great Depression, because you could speculate. You could borrow enormous amounts of money without having any collateral at all. And you could borrow on margin. And people were doing this, by the way, including people I knew, including a couple of friends of mine. They weren't wealthy people, but it was so easy. They could go into Miami. In this case, it was Miami. And they were building some new buildings, and they would buy two apartments. And then they would turn around. They'd buy them, let's say, for $180,000 at the insider price and flip them for $250,000. And then take that money and go buy more apartments. And one of them at one time owned 9 apartments. This is a school teacher. 9 apartments, and this person had at least $2 million in debt. And I said, you're a speculator. This is no different than the 1920s. You're going to get creamed. I told him this in 2005. Well, he got creamed. He lost everything. But greed took over. Speculators breed a whole lot of greed. And that's what we had in the Great Depression. So when the interest rates began to go up, and speculators were borrowing more and more money, then there was currency in circulation. And in 1928, the Federal Reserve raised rates, and that created the crash. It allowed the collapse. And then go forward, July 1944, Bretton Woods in New Hampshire. The U.S. dollar was linked to gold. And then all the world banks were linked to our dollar. We became the reserve currency. So the U.S. dollar was supreme. This was following the Second World War. Everyone else's economy was crashed and burned. And they didn't. England had no money. They were bankrupt. Japan was bankrupt. Germany was bankrupt. Italy was bankrupt. Everyone was bankrupt except us. So we pegged it to the dollar. And what that means is that the dollar is the reserve currency, meaning it's the asset. And so for every dollar you loan out, you better have a dollar of gold. And because if people wanted to come and redeem their dollars for gold, it had to be there. So we were there. And then jump forward to 1965 when Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program, it drastically increased inflation and debt. And then in 1971, we had too many dollars being redeemed, and we didn't have the gold, so we took ourselves off the gold standard. Richard Nixon did. And then in 1981, the dollar lost 45% of its value. And between 1980 and 2007, the great moderation, that's the rising stock market. And there was no inflation. Why? Because people trusted the market. Big mistake. And because we believe that there were very bright people, economists, who knew a whole lot more than we did about how the markets work. Well, there was a 300% increase in Wall Street's positions. And then that led to derivatives being brought in, asset inflation, and we had a huge bull market. And that bull market is what caused a lot of our problems. We had overvalued assets. Their real value was a lot less. Right now, the Wall Street's about 18,500. Its real value is around 6,000. And we ended up having what was called a jubilant bubble. And people wanted to believe in the market, so they put their money into houses. We made it too easy, too inexpensive for everyone to have a house. And then when you have a house, well, you have to have carpet, and you have to have a washing machine and dryer, and you have to have a game room, and you have to have, everyone's got their own bedrooms, everyone has to have their own flat TV, and everyone has to have a car. So we had to have everything. So every house had to have everything, and people didn't realize you own nothing. You own nothing, zero. Why? Because you didn't buy this from savings that based upon what you had earned. You borrowed the money. When you borrow money to buy anything, you don't own it. Whoever you borrow the money from owns the title to your car, to your home, to anything. And hence you miss a payment, they take it back and they charge you astronomical interest, even though initially you might have gotten an inexpensive interest. So we all went crazy as a nation. We got greedy altogether. We got stupid altogether. We were intemperate altogether. We were careless altogether. And we didn't give an S about anything or anyone except our own damn needs. What do I want? How do I feel? And so we bought love, we bought possessions, and everybody had everything, except they owned nothing. And the bankers knew this, Wall Street knew it, the speculators knew it, and they knew that the day of reckoning would come when people say, we're going off this year to Cancun, and our house we bought at $200,000, now we're $400,000, so we're going to take $100,000 out, and we're going to play with that money, we want to add this, I want a boat. Yeah, well, now, what you didn't own, you don't own even more. You owe debt. It was all a bubble. And the Fed saw it. The Federal Reserve could have stopped it. The Federal Reserve could have cooled the market. It chose not to. Alan Greenspan was guilty of this, along with sycophants who work for the Federal Reserve. They all knew, every one of them, knew we were in bubbles. They refused to cool the market and tell people, can you really afford what you're buying? Can you afford the car? Can you afford the house? Can you afford the multiple houses? Can you afford all this? Can you afford to send your kids to an Ivy League school? Is there really a difference between an Ivy League PhD and a regular? Not in reality. In perception, yes, not in reality. But we don't live with reality. We live with perception. We are up to our eyeballs in perception and deception. And so we borrowed our way into debt. The corporations borrowed their way into debt. They began to borrow at zero interest. So with everyone borrowing as much as they could all the time, we ended up with an astronomical debt. And unfortunately, the banks were given a free pass. No matter what mistakes you made, we will bail you out. Wall Street will bail you out. Big pharma, big corporations, no matter what crimes you commit, will bail you out. Everyone who was on the inside got bailed out, and everyone else got slammed down. And instead of throwing these people out of positions of power, the and all Fox News and all the rest on the right, they got us more of the same. Do you really think Hillary Clinton is any different than George Bush, who is any different than Bill Clinton, who is any different than Gerald Ford, who is any different than Ronald Reagan, who is any different than Richard Nixon? They are all selected, and then they're rewarded by becoming millionaire, multimillionaires, $100 million speaking engagement. Do you really think that anyone's going to give you a $500,000 speech? They're politicians. They're not going to tell you anything you didn't already know. This is the payback. This is the legal form of a payback in the United States. And so we wake up today and we're a nation that is bankrupt. We're completely, totally bankrupt. We should allow the big banks to all fail. We should take every single bank, every major bank, and we should bankrupt them, put them in bankruptcy, erase all their debt, erase the $505 trillion interest rate derivative bubble. We should erase all this and realize that Wall Street can sink because it does not in any way help, protect, or allow for a sustainable future for the rest of America. It's not a part of us. We've been lied to. And all the handpicked people, from Henry Paulson to Larry Summers to Robert Rubin and Timothy Geithner, all of these were from either Goldman Sachs or other banks. They were there to serve them, not us. Our presidents are there to serve them, not us. Our legislators, our judges, our journalists, our news media are there to serve them, not us. We have become a nation of sociopaths and technocrats and autocrats supporting the sociopaths, of power complexes that defy any reason to assume that these people will do anything measurably humane or beneficial for the rest of us. That is not their intent. So as long as we continue to support them, then do not beg the question, why aren't they helping us? They've never helped us. They have no intention to. They help themselves. That's how the game is fixed. And by the way, from Michael Snyder from Economic Blog, quote, all over the planet, large banks are massively overexposed to derivative contracts. Interest rate derivatives account for the biggest chunk of these derivative contracts. According to the Bank of International Settlements, the notional value of all interest rate derivative contracts outstanding around the globe is a staggering $505 trillion. Considering the fact that the United States national debt is only $18 trillion, and by the way, that's not true. That's only the federal government's actual debt. That is not the $21 trillion given to big corporations by the Federal Reserve, which is not considered a part of that debt. It is not the $26 trillion of corporate debt. It is not the interest on the credit card debt. It is not the student loan debt. It is not the mortgage debt. Funded entitlement debt. It is not the state pension deficit, $6 trillion debt. Add all those together and you got anywhere between $130 and $170 trillion. We are bankrupt. We are no better than Zimbabwe, except we had the power of the printing press. It's all an illusion. And we have a major, major political force that controls a military force to keep people from asking the questions, are we broke yet? And that answer a long time ago is, we've been broke. And there's no way in the world we're going to pay back the T-bills to countries like China and Japan and India and Saudi Arabia. No, they all give us money to keep this illusion that somehow we have something backing us. The good faith. What faith? The faith in what? I'm Gary Noll. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. My suggestion, I would stop buying stuff, people. I would not only stop buying stuff, but I would try to get out of debt as much as possible, because we're about to get a two-stage smackdown. First will come the smackdown from China becoming the number one manufacturer and exporter in the world. And then the change in the value system of the dollar. It will no longer be the exclusive world reserve currency. There'll be mixed currencies, which will cause a drop in the value of the dollar. And ours is not pegged to gold, but in China, they now have the largest gold reserves in the world. Second is Russia. And when you can back up your currency with gold, and we can back up our currency with nothing, imagine how that's going to play. So where everyone ran to America and ran to the dollar, only because there was no other place to run to for speculators. So that is going to happen, I believe, in the next 24 months. And then we're going to see a recession with the bubbles bursting, the commercial real estate bubble, the real estate housing bubble. We're going to see bond bubbles, derivative bubbles. All these are going to burst, and it will dwarf 2007. Dwarf it. I expect to see 10 million homes foreclosed on. I expect to see the unemployment rate unofficially at a 50%. I expect to see it happening. I hope I'm wrong. And I hope that the people in this audience are wise enough to realize that you better be very proactive. And I'd be taking my money out of their banks, because under the new rules, they can take all the money in your account, all of it, every penny, your safe deposit box, your savings, checking, and consider it a part of the value of the stock in that company, give you back a worthless stock in the bank and control your money. They did it in Cyprus last year, remember. They could do it here. So I don't trust them on any level, and I'm willing to debate any member of the federal government on any topic, any day of the week. You have an open invitation. If you believe that I have stepped over the line and misstated a position, you have an open invitation to come and debate me on any of these issues, particularly on where I see the United States going as far as our environmental efforts, a disaster, doing nothing, our false and phony, completely fraudulent a banking system, and how it's not connected to the rest of us. Therefore, it should have been deconstructed, and the militarization of the world. You have an open invitation. Have a nice day, everyone.